This is Packaging Solutions from the Experts, brought to you by ABC Packaging Direct. And now, here's your host, David Marinick.
Welcome back, everyone, to Packaging Solutions from the Experts. My name is David Marinack, and joining me today from Painesville, Ohio, is the Director of Sales and Marketing for B.B. Bradley. That's the B.B. Bradley Company. That's Tom Becker. And Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tom, since 1977, the B.B. Bradley Company has been designing and delivering superior, cost-effective packaging and cushioning solutions. And we'll touch base about some of the other types of packaging that you've kind of developed over the years. But in particular, the cushioning world, where people hear cushioning and, of course, foam, the generic term foam, they usually think of the carpet padding or the soft cushiony stuff that they might find in a mattress or something like that. But tell us some other things that could be or use in your world, which is a lot of industrial packaging, but also some retail, I would imagine. But tell us some other things that are used, or your products in the foam world are used for.
Well, it's remarkable how many interior packaging opportunities you encounter there, where there is nothing more required than to square off an odd-shaped unit so that it fits in a rectangular or a square-shaped box.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're really just positioning or blocking and bracing something so that it doesn't move around. A very high percentage of interior packaging is not specifically cushioning or any other damage control element other than simply to keep something from bouncing around a box. Cushioning is certainly a big part of our business, given
right.
the nature of our product. And when you get involved with electronic equipment and other kinds of damageable materials that are moved through our trucking and supply scheme in this country, they see a fair amount of abuse, and the product has to be cushioned or protected against shock, is another way to say it, in that transportation environment. And that's how things often start off, but it is remarkable how many of them really wind up being nothing more than bracing and blocking.
And also, one of the things you and I have chatted about over the years is the sequencing, along those same lines, is blocking and bracing and sequencing as the people move products to a line or assembly line or production line.
Absolutely. Ergonomics is a big consideration, not only in terms of ergonomics, how far do you reach, this sort of thing,
right.
but in the process of doing all that, controlling or managing or having a better opportunity to manage what's coming to an assembly line, if you will, and in what increment, what quantity increment, how are they placed in the package so that they are used or pulled from the package in the right order.
Right, in the most effective way.
Exactly.
Right.
Ergonomics is a very broad term, but it certainly does extend into things like sequencing, as you say.
Yeah, sequencing, and obviously affecting the bottom line, how many people can push through in a certain amount of time, or mm-hmm. pack in a carton, or whatever it might be.
The focus on an assembly line needs to be on the task at hand and doing it in an efficient quality way. And manufacturers are very sensitive to having a worker in that position spending too much time worrying about which part is going
right.
out of the package.
Right. Good point. Good point. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the different types of foam that you guys work with on a regular basis?
Sure. There are essentially three families of foam plastics that are typical in the marketplace for cushioning, bracing and blocking, other types of applications that we get involved in. The families are polyethylene foams, polyurethane foams, and polystyrene foams. Polystyrene foam being the fused bead, coffee cup, ice chest kind of material that people are familiar with.
The styrofoam.
Frequently mislabeled styrofoam.
Right.
Polyurethane foam being the seat cushion, soft, resilient, mattressy kind of materials. Polyethylene foam, probably a lot less awareness there in terms of the general public, but polyethylene foams are a highly efficient cushioning element used for heavier objects where the weight is in excess of what a seat cushion or polyurethane foam would be prudent to use for.
Do Do most people come to you with that knowledge, or are you pretty much counting on to kind of say, okay, here's some options based upon obviously what you're trying to package, how far you're trying to package, the damage control, whatever. But is that something that most people come to you with those answers, or are you pretty much leading the way on that, on instructing them what to use?
Well, it's rarely, rarely the first one. It's almost always the second, where a customer may recognize that if they have a device or a piece of equipment or product that if it were to fall, say, from a desk, mm-hmm. that it's likely that there would be damage. They recognize then that they have to stop the damage, or what they in general terms refer to as cushioning, but that's about as far as the knowledge goes. And then almost always they rely on us to assess what is proper in their situation to do what they have to have done.
Right.
How are you shipping it, to how heavy is the unit, to all kinds of different parameters that have to be considered. And then they want, obviously, the most cost-effective way to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, which is prevent damage.
Yeah, ultimately, at the end of the day, so to speak. But tell us a little bit about, if you will, our clients, and I'm bouncing around a little bit because we're talking a little bit about the foam. And when people hear foam, they generally think of, you know, ship it there and get it done and throw the stuff away. But you've really been at the forefront of the returnable packaging, helping the environment without really even coining it that, if you will. I mean, being in the a lot of your clients, I should say, are using the foam for returnable packaging, so they get a better yield, better. It's a cost advantage, obviously, to use returnable packaging versus just use it once and throw it away.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about in the returnable world. Is that a bigger chunk of your business now versus the, you know, get it there once and throw it away?
Increasingly.
Okay.
And there's a term, a frequently heard term, that applies both to returnables as well as to sustainability or environmentally friendly packaging, if you will, and that's closed loop. In the returnable world, a closed loop supply chain, meaning a product coming from a supplier to an end user, and then the packaging can go back directly to the supplier,
right,
for reuse. That would be a closed-loop environment in which returnables are an increasingly popular way to handle those kinds of packaging requirements.
Hmm.
In the recycling world, of course, closed-loop means something slightly different, but essentially it's the same. Something that brings something back around again to be used again. And the returnable area, the returnable business, has really been in the industrial packaging world for a number of years,
right,
with the intent of saving money, obviously, over a period of time where new packaging is purchased for every shipment. You don't have disposal costs and all those other things.
Right.
But also for, as we mentioned earlier, the opportunity to create better ergonomics, sequencing, and some of the other things that come to play that improve the whole usability environment.
Right.
So returnables, yes. More, it used to be almost entirely an automotive thing. And anymore, customers in all walks of industry want to hear about what returnables are, what they can do, and if they can participate.
Right, and if it works for what they're packaging and what they're trying to do in their shipping to their clients or
Absolutely.
The end user.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Tom Becker, Director of Sales and Marketing with the B.B. Bradley Company in Painesville, Ohio, www.bbbradley.com. Tom, we were just chatting a little bit about this, the returnable world, and obviously now the new buzzword out there with sustainable packaging. Give us a little bit an idea as your industry, the fabricated foam industry, have there been any changes or things in place right now to kind of jump on the bandwagon, be a part of the bigger scheme of the sustainable environmental impact of packaging and trying again, looking along the lines of the environmental impact of packaging?
Absolutely. And really on two fronts, David. the first is that the world of foam plastics, that is the producers of the raw material itself, have gotten very tuned in to for environmental reasons as well as economic reasons, I might add, to this whole notion of using as much recycled content in their material as possible. For example, a primary supplier of ours, Sealed Air Corporation, mm-hmm. has a, for lack of a better term again, closed loop arrangement with their customers, fabricators, people who, like we, buy their raw material and convert it into a product, whereby they, at no cost to us, pick up our scrap, return it to their manufacturing facilities, grind it up, and reintroduce it into raw material. We have not for years put any of that sort of product at all into a landfill. It's been years and years and years. The same is true in the polyurethane foam industry, where I suppose everyone has seen the blotchy, multicolored carpet padding that may be sold or used underneath your carpet. Well, that's made entirely from reprocessed or recycled polyurethane foam. The polystyrene industry has gone even a step further to the point where they have an association around the country now where there are drop points available for anyone to return polystyrene foam to be recycled, reconstituted, and reintroduced into raw material. So that's one area.
Right.
The second area that is equally as important, if not more important, is what the we, the general public, I'll put us all into that, consider to be environmentally friendly.
Right.
At one time it meant only that if it got buried in a landfill, it would disintegrate and go away.
Right.
There's a much better understanding now and a much broader definition for what is environmentally proper. Recyclability, reusability, reduction in product size for equal performance, all those things constitute an environmentally friendlier packaging scheme.
Great points.
That has become accepted, and properly so now, for the for all of us who are involved in this industry to work to.
Well, and it's a good point you brought up too, as far as you know, there's the reduce, reuse, recycle, the three R's, if you will.
Right.
And a lot of times people need to look at the big picture and say, okay, what am I using right now, and you know, how much of a footprint, if you will, is my packaging or cushioning or internal packaging taking up, and can I reduce that? Which ultimately people have shown, if you can reduce, that's much more effective than some of these other crazy materials that are out there. When you look at, compare them, you know, the crazy materials that are out there may cost you five times what you're currently using.
Right.
Is that really an effective use of your money versus reducing something? And you know, the studies have shown that reduction is actually much more effective than some of these other things that are out there right now.
Absolutely. It's also, well, I guess we should mention at this point that, and maybe people are aware of the Walmart program that's ongoing right now with that same thought in mind. They've put a lot of pressure back to producers and manufacturers and suppliers of products that they purchase to do all these things, particularly and especially reduce package size.
Right.
Now, there's an environmental advantage that's extremely significant there. There's also an advantage to Walmart in that they get more product on a trailer and transporting it. They get more trailer or more product on a shelf.
Yeah.
In the same shelf space, there's good reasons beyond just the environmental issues themselves to do all these things. But it hasn't escaped our world. That is the foam plastics world, and manufacturers and fabricators and consumers alike in my world are all interested in that.
You know, one of the things that the segue into one of the things I wanted to bring up as we were talking is a lot of the material. I know most of our listeners right now have some experience with foam or foam fabrication, but one of the things that I don't think people really realize is there's a lot of thought and effort and a lot more to just hacking up some foam, for lack of a better way to put it, and packing it around a product. My point with this is that, you know, I've seen several different foam fabricators over the years. One of the things that really has always separated B.B. Bradley, in my opinion, is when you see fabricated foam from B.B. Bradley versus XYZ company, yours almost looks like it's molded. And I don't want to go spend too much time on molded foam. It's a whole different world. But molded foam, in essence, looks much cleaner, almost like it was, you know, made from a real high, high quantity run, if you will.
Right.
But what's interesting is you and I were chatting before, the fact that your fabricated foam often looks like molded is not by accident. That's kind of a philosophy that your founder started from the very beginning.
Right. He as a part of the development and growth and progress of this company from day one, he insisted on reaching past what was norm at the time to equipment and facilities and processes that pushed the limits of fabrication techniques as people generally accepted them, with always the thought in mind of controlling, managing, having a better way to determine quality of product as it went out the back door.
Right.
He did that specifically with a lot of CNC processes that we instituted at our company long before they became generally known or accepted within our industry.
Or even used, even thought of being used.
Exactly.
Right.
But we got two things out of them beyond the how the product looks. And most specifically, those are a much more efficient, from a production standpoint, a much more proficient and efficient process. And secondly, an ability to make every end product we produce the same without variability that you often see in custom fabrication of any kind.
And let's not forget the smaller runs. I mean, I'm not saying smaller as in onesie twosie, but you know, you're not running 500,000 of a part, but you may be running 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 of a particular part. And for you to be able to control that type of tolerance and that type of quality really separates you from the rest of the pack.
Well, thank you. We think it does too, and I have to tell you that part of the push for this from the market side was from the returnable side of things and our desire to be a part of that and the demands that that brought beyond the disposable fabrication market that had been traditionally our playground. Higher standards were set because it was going to be used for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, not just once and thrown away.
Right.
It had to be right, and it had to be right and hold up for 5 years. So it brought a different level of expectation, which fortunately, in many ways, we were already positioned to be able to accomplish. It just was for a different reason.
I think it's fascinating as far as just looking out into that world, like we were talking about, using those pieces of equipment that make such high-tech looking material. My point with this is that a lot of times clients are getting into or they've got a product to package, and initially they have no idea how many of this they're gonna ever need, because it's all a guessing game at this point, whether it's retail or industrial. The ability to use your type of equipment and your process to take on those smaller trial runs, which we all know there's no one's going to retire off of trial runs, but the point is to be able to really work with a client from the very beginning of the stage from the trial run to the a medium-sized run into the larger runs, you really kind of grasp them to the very point where they're now beyond you, if you will, but you really have an opportunity and an advantage to get them from the very beginning, the infancy stage, all the way to the point in full production. That's a big swing, and that's a real advantage to be able to kind of have that type of equipment versus being able to just go, no, can't touch it because it's gonna. I need 5,000 minimum run to even think about it. You guys have a real advantage with your equipment and process.
Well, we can. You're right, David, and we can create a near. Let's use the word molded for that. We can create a near molded appearance, but with the flexibility in the sense that we're not in a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 mold,
right,
with the flexibility to make adjustments, changes, improvements, that kind of thing.
On the fly.
Always happen in
right.
the infancy without heavy expenses. And we talked earlier about, do clients know what they need in terms of cushioning when they come to you? The same is true of the evolutionary process you just outlined for the introduction and evolution of a new product. Clients and customers need someone who is willing to tell them, okay, it's time now, you should be looking at a molded part. Knowing how to make that assessment, knowing how to, and when it makes sense to do so or not, is also something that we're relied on by customers frequently.
Right. Now that's good stuff. And we're looking ahead, Tom. Take that crystal ball out there and look ahead, because you've obviously seen, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, I wouldn't say the older days per se, but, you know, we're now in some really interesting times in our world of whether it be retail or industrial packaging. Take a look, foam fabrication. I mean, is this something that would be termed a hot industry with lots of potential down the road, something that's just going to be here forever? Give us an idea of where you see the market going.
Well, I could speak, I guess we should speak specifically to the world of packaging as it relates to foam plastics, because there are, my goodness, our world from someone, you know, making mattresses to someone making a filter for a motor or whatever, those are all foam plastics opportunities. But from the standpoint of the packaging world, we are very, very active in the medical area, and there is a lot of interest these days, as everyone I'm sure realizes, in better technology in that field that brings costs down, and other new opportunities that crop up all the time that are, at this moment, you can't even foresee them.
Right.
That we are very active in. The particular region of the world that we live in is very, very active in venture capital, medical products, and in startup businesses in the medical field, many of which, in either as a component to the product itself or, for purposes of this conversation, in packaging
right.
we're very involved in, and it just seems to be almost an endless stream of those kinds of things coming out. The returnable world is also growing, and as I indicated earlier, it's expanding further and further and further into other areas beyond automotive.
Right.
And we're finding that to be very ripe ground for us for future sales.
I think you made a really good point, too. A lot of people don't realize that this, Painesville, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, the Midwest in general, a lot of this stuff kind of starts around here. It may be, owned or managed in Palo Alto, California, but a lot of the stuff here is kind of, you know, it kind of starts and evolves and ultimately is manufactured a lot of times in this general corridor. And B.B. Bradley's really always had their hands in a lot of different pies, which, again, goes back to all the other things that we were just talking about, your equipment, your process, your philosophies, those kind of things. So it's just that you're in a good position. That's that the foam fabrication is obviously not going away. It continues to evolve, and you guys are at the forefront as it evolves.
Well, exactly, and we're in a very entrepreneurial region,
yeah,
for a lot of reasons, but it propagates small to mid-sized businesses with small to mid-sized volumes with technically advanced products in many respects.
Right.
And that kind of an environment is always going to be ripe for us.
Right.
Always.
Thomas, we're coming to the end of our show. I can't thank you enough. I really, really appreciate your time. You've always been very generous with your time, especially for our guests and myself as well. And again, we've talked with Tom Becker, Director of Sales and Marketing with the B.B. Bradley Company. That's www.bbbradley.com, 440-354-2005. Tom, thanks again for the time. I really, really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you soon, my friend.
I've enjoyed it, David. Thank you for
Thanks,
asking.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for listening to Packaging Solutions from the Experts with David Marinick. For more information, visit abc-packaging.com.